resolve, and sure grittiness.
It starts with an attitude. We need swagger, okay? Regardless of what happens out there, doesn't matter. Keep your swagger.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Podcast. We're your hosts today, TJ and Raj.
Hey there.
So we got the trends episode for you. Trends Day Wednesday. We're going to talk about hot players, cold players, if we buy it. Before we get into that, you guys can hit us up on Twitter at FHF Hockey. What we like to do with these trends is we crowdsource them. We want to know what the pulse is. Like, we want to talk about guys that you guys want to hear about. So you can always hit us up on Twitter, you know, hey, put this guy on trends, that kind of thing. The Discord is also a way to get in touch. We have a channel dedicated straight for trends. So if somebody's running too hot, somebody's running too cold, you drop them right in there and we'll bring them up in the next show. Discord, feel free to join it. Let's get into news and notes before we really dive into these trends here. With Zach not here, I'm going to take over on the injuries. We're going to talk about Austin Matthews first. He was suspended 2 games for that cross-check hit of Rasmus Dahlin. Tons of people talking about it right now. So he's going to be out. It's obviously going to throw a new wrinkle into the whole Rocket Richard thing, even though he's kind of head and shoulders above everybody. But you're going to see Tavares move up and the lines are going to shake out a little bit differently. Mainly what I'm looking for is how is this going to affect Michael Bunting? Now, we're not talking long term because it's just a 2-game suspension, but I'm wondering, like, what's your pulse on Michael Bunting right now?
I was a big hater, or well, not definitely a disbeliever in him until the last.
That was the thing. Like, we just didn't, you know, benefit of the doubt wasn't that strong.
But he's, it's been really consistent, and he's still playing with Marner. So I think if I have Bunting, and I think I do on a team or two still, I'll still hold on to him. Like, I'm not dropping him because Matthews isn't there. I think he'll be just fine. And it's only 2 games. Fuck.
I thought that was pretty funny. Somebody brought it up in the Discord that, you know, guys like Pierre LeBrun are tweeting last year about Kaprizov being too old at 24 years old to win the Calder. But then, you know, the same guys this year are talking like Michael Bunting has to win it. Why isn't his name in the running more often? Blah, blah, blah. He's 26. Yeah, I get it. Like, Kaprizov had 4 years experience on a pro team over in the KHL. But we're looking at a 26-year-old 2014 draft pick
in
Michael Bunting right now with 85 NHL games under his belt already. So I don't know. Is there hypocrisy there, or was the precedent kind of set with Kaprizov so they get a free pass this year? Like, yeah, it can be, you know, an older guy with a little bit of experience as long as it's technically their rookie season. Like, what's your pulse here?
Oh, man. I think the world will explode if Bunting wins it, just because of that reason, because of, you know, how much everyone loves to say Toronto's the center of everything, which it is. But I don't know. I have a kind of mixed feelings about it. Like, he's a man, and most of the other rookies are young adults, to say it nicely, right? There's a huge difference between an 18, 19-year-old and a 26-year-old man, put it that way, right? At the same time, it's his first year. It's his rookie season. As far as the rules go, I think he's legally allowed to win it. So
he is.
If he deserves it, he should get it. It's not as bad as back in when, I think it was one of the Stastnys won it when he was like almost 30 and like stuff like that. But I mean, if he deserves it, I think he should get it. If it's super close between him and someone else, I think that should be a deciding factor. Like, dude has like 6 years more experience than some of the people that are on par with him. Personally, I think Mo Sider should get it.
That's me too. I'm Mo Sider. And a lot of the guys in the Discord, I think it's important to say that this opinion is not ours. It was a tweet that I thought was interesting and it spurred discussion. I forget. I think it was like TSN Parody put this out. And, you know, we talked about it in the Discord. A lot of Toronto fans were like, listen, we are voting for Mo Sider too. You know, there's part of the world that is so loud about Michael Bunting because they're in Toronto. And I think the rest of the world is putting extra scrutiny on it because Michael Bunting plays in Toronto. So it's this double-edged sword that it's hard to get past. But the season he's putting together cannot be understated. He's having a great season. These next 2 games, next 1 game, are going to be a little tough for him, but I think he'll be fine. I'm team Mo Sider too. And that's that. All right, moving on in the injury ward here. You got Jacob Chychrun. He is going to be out 2 to 4 weeks because Derek Forbort is a piece of shit. I'm reading Zach's words here.
So. Yeah, I noticed he wrote that in there and didn't share it with me till after he left.
At Mike Rogerson.
Jerk.
He added you in a Word document.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? So,
yeah, he put at Mike Rogerson.
If you have any question why Zach doesn't have a Twitter account, there you go. He's adding people on Microsoft Word.
Did you get my DocX? I pinged you. Anyway, Andrew Kopp is out. He took a high hit from Oscar Sundquist. He's out with an undisclosed. You know, no stranger to concussions at this point. So they're probably just being real careful about him. It looks like he's just out indefinitely at this point. And that doesn't mean a long time. It just means we don't have a definition for it. Aiden Hill out again. I think James Reimer came back for San Jose. So just keep an eye on what's going on in the San Jose crease. And what's going on with Elias Pettersson, man? He was out the other day, upper body injury. I got an alert from Yahoo that he is out.
He is out. Pretty certain he is out tonight as well. I guess the game just started. But it doesn't sound major. It sounds like just a precautionary thing. But
yeah, Durant said that. It's not a long-term injury.
But at the same time, it can't be nothing because, I mean, they have one fighting chance here to make the playoffs if everything goes right. So that he's got to play every game if he can. So it has to be a real injury because, you know, they need him right now, if ever, right? While he's finally playing well.
Yeah, night and day, his season.
Everything has to go right for them to get into the playoffs. So it is a real injury, but there was one, you know, Twitter conspiracy tweet, someone saying, showing like how the Canucks announced this injury was the exact same way they announced the last one when he was out for a season, but I think that's just stupid. I think he'll be back in a game or two. I don't see it going any more than that.
Tyler Bertuzzi has COVID just in time for them to have a Calgary game. So it's kind of like, it's pretty good timing there. Detroit, yeah, they just played the Oilers and they're going to play Vancouver. So those are games Bertuzzi was going to miss anyway. You know, hopefully he's back in time for Saturday's matchup against the Kraken in Seattle. So we'll see if he meets up with the team there. He was going to miss those games anyway. So really no harm done at this point. But yeah, Zach wrote here, the irony of him catching COVID, as there's definitely something there. Boone Jenner week to week with a back injury. Cole Sillinger looked really good in his stead. So keep an eye on what's going on there. Voracek came back, Line A came back, so it wasn't as bleak as we made it out to be. It was just, you know, three big injuries all on the same night was tough to swallow for them. Nico Hischier comes back, and this is going to be one of our first questions. Yanli Goodtakes on Twitter asks if Nico Hischier is poised to hit 70 points if he's healthy, or at least maybe, like, you know, he might not be healthy, but we can talk about 70 point pace the rest of the way. What is your read on what to expect out of Nico Hischier this season and next season, I guess?
I think he's a fantastic player, but I think he's a little bit like a Cirelli, with maybe closer to like a Bo Horvat. Like I don't see him being like a massive scorer. I've personally avoided him in fantasy because of the question of that, like, especially having a guy like, you know, another C like Jack Hughes, who's just all offense. Hischier is probably going to settle into more of that two-way 25 goal kind of guy. So I think he's going to be great, but I don't think there's a huge upside.
70 points sounds about right for the upside.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it could very well be next year. Yeah. You know, he's been a 50-point guy pretty much his whole career. You know, came in right next to Taylor Hall, put up 52 points in his rookie season. And he got 56 the next, 51, 43, but that was only in 21 games. And this year it's a 61-point pace. So I like the trajectory he's on, but I don't see like a huge blip coming. And maybe 9 points in a pace isn't a huge blip or anything, but, you know, to call him a consistent 70-point guy is a little bit far-fetched to me at this point, unless I see something really, really interesting.
You know what I would say, though? Like, I know Zach's on board. I think you're on board, too. Like, I do like New Jersey more than I've ever liked them right now. Just as a team, like, I love where they're going, and I like the way the team's put together. And once they figure out that they don't need to buy these bad $20 million defenseman, they're going to be, I like their trajectory like a lot more than I have in the past few years anyways.
You know what I was thinking about today is I grew up in New Jersey until I was 8, and then we moved here to PA. I had the opportunity to become a Devils fan. I remember walking into my neighbors, you know, we played with their kids all the time. They were some of our best friends. And the dad was a huge Devils fan, and I could have got into it right then and there, and my whole life would have been different. And right now, I'd be enjoying where my team's headed rather than uncertainty.
You could have lived through those glory years with Corey Schneider. And...
yeah. Yeah, well, it is what it is. Giroux is playing his 1,000th game, and that's pretty fucking cool. His favorite food is grilled cheese, and the Wells Fargo Center is hooking every restaurant up. They're all serving grilled cheese tonight, which is pretty neat.
Nice.
Good on Giroux. If they're gonna trade him, it's gonna be over the weekend. So keep an eye out. Like, he wanted to get this 1,000th game in, and he's doing it. So,
do you personally? That's fucking cool, and it's nice to see like big players get the proper milestones like that. Like, especially in like today's game, I think that's going to become increasingly rare, and it already has, right? Like, you know, when the Sedins played their whole career here, or you get like a guy like that getting those big moments with his team, I think that's huge. I think that's really important to the longevity of the game, right? Having said that, do you think there's already a deal made for the next day? Like, do you think he's out the door?
I don't know. I know he's got a full no move. So he controls where he's going. And that sort of plays into the leverage as far as like what our return could possibly be, just due to the fact that, like, you know, Giroux wants to go somewhere. So the team already knows, like, hey, he wants to come here. So there's little leverage when it comes to that. If the return's good enough, like, I want to see G win a cup. I don't know. I can see Florida making a case for him. Like, Joe Thornton just came back today, so they have a pretty stacked center position, you know, with Barkov, Bennett. Now Thornton and Noah Shari, my favorite fourth line center in the world. I like who they have, but you know, if they can put G in one of the top six spots in there, I think that would play well. Even though Thornton played top line left wing today, which is very interesting. So maybe G is their, you know, third line center. You know, there's certain places I think that would be more beneficial for him. I'd love to see him in Minnesota, just because they don't really have any center talent. So there's a couple teams that I think would actually be good for his value. And then the rest of them are like, you know, you're a Stanley Cup favorite because you have a cemented top six already. So if they're picking up Giroux, it's to be in the middle six. It's not because you're missing a top line, top power play guy. That straight up doesn't happen. You know, maybe it happens in Minnesota. Maybe now with Landeskog out. So there's a couple places that I think would be really, really interesting for him fantasy-wise. But the rest of them are just going to be, it's just going to be a hockey move, man. Like, look what happened to Tyler Toffoli. He's in the middle six now. Like, he's playing well. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, you don't see top teams in the league seeking top line, top power play guys because they're not a top team in the league if they don't already have those players. So it's just really hard to kind of think that a trade is going to be good for him fantasy value wise.
Find me a top tier team that doesn't have a number one C, like, really, right?
But you know what's interesting is I'm hearing more JT Miller to Pittsburgh rumors.
He's not going anywhere.
I don't think he's getting traded, but his name is still in these rumors, and that seems like a, you know, Pittsburgh thing to do.
It does, and that seems like a Brian Burke thing to do, is steal another team's heart and soul. So
yeah.
I just don't see it. It makes absolutely zero fucking sense. And anybody who tries to reason otherwise is just not, it's wrong. Like, if anything, it makes way more sense to play him out. $5 million for by far your best player. By far. It's not close. Pettersson is not near him right now, even the way he's been playing. And he's the grit of the team. And he's the, like, yeah, it's not going anywhere. Like, Vancouver would lose their shit after everything that's gone on in the last year and the way the team's turned around. If management went and got rid of JT Miller right now, it blows everything they just did. So unless Sidney Crosby's coming back the other way, I really don't think so.
Yep.
Which I would be in for. I would be in for that.
And I don't think it's happening.
I don't think so either.
No doubt. Tyson Jost got traded to Minnesota. Nico Sturm goes to Colorado. I love this move for Colorado. Nico Sturm, super underrated, real big body, kind of fits what they're trying to do. Bottom six center. Same goes for Tyson Jost. Like, there's not much there for Tyson Jost at this point. So I do see Colorado winning this one, especially with salary coming off the books for Colorado, opening up a little space for them to make moves, whether or not they, you know, put Landeskog on LTIR or Girard or whatever to free up more space, which I do think is going to happen in the next couple of days. We're going to see that. And then they're going to make a move over the weekend, what with trade deadline being next week. Another move they made was Josh Manson to Colorado. Now, obviously, you get a defenseman getting traded to one of the best teams in the league. It's going to spur some conversation in fantasy circles. And the Discord was a little bit of buzz. You know, we put a tweet out asking who you guys want us to talk about. And Josh Manson came up on our Twitter as well. I don't think there's anything here. Not for fantasy. I think this is just like, you know, we need a body. We need a backup body at that. I really don't see Josh Manson making an impact for fantasy at all. Like, maybe if you're in the deepest league, like if you're in a dynasty league where you already owned Josh Manson, I think this is good.
Yeah.
You know, you upgrade it a little bit. Or if you are in a deep enough league where Josh Manson is rostered, whoever owns Josh Manson got a slight value bump. But if you're in like a 12 or 14 team league, with average size rosters right around 16 to 20, this is not somebody that I'm putting on a watch list. This is not, certainly not somebody I'm putting on my roster. I don't think there's a lot here.
Zero interest for me, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that's it. We're going to talk about trends now. We're going to move into our trends segment. And Grizz wanted to know about some bad teams that are doing well and some good teams that are doing poorly. So we're going to talk about Montreal. We're going to talk about Arizona. And I think we should kick it off with Arizona. 7-3-0 in their last 10. They're scoring over 4 goals a game. Their PDO is way the fuck up at like 110. They're shooting 16% since February 9th. So even like longer than 10 games in this stretch. And since that Kraken game, I was doing some advanced stats research here, just trying to see what's going on with this team. They have the league worst Corsi 4, so they're not controlling play. They have the second least number of shots and the seventh worst expected goals for. So they're getting lucky. They have the second lowest scoring chances for per 60, sixth fewest highest danger chances for per 60, third highest high dangers goal for. So on the little amount of chances that they're getting in the high danger areas, they're capitalizing on them. 32% of their high danger chances are going in right now. That's a league high. And they also have the highest shooting percentage as a team by a full 3% over the same span. I think all of this just says they are on a lucky stretch. Big lucky stretch here.
Are you saying that you think the worst team in the league can't keep this up? Like, I mean, yeah, it's definitely unsustainable for sure, but fuck, it's sustained for a bit.
You know, I was looking at their most recent stretch. Like, they put up 9 goals against Detroit, 8 against Ottawa, 5 against Mrazek. Like, I don't want to say the Leafs, but against Mrazek, another 5 against Ottawa. And they did that second Ottawa game on 15 shots. So they scored on 1 out of every 3 shots they took.
And they just scored 6 and beat Montreal 6-3. So the one thing that I think out of all that stuff, like, they're flying high, they're getting lucky fully. Like, that's where momentum is a thing in sports, and this is one of those times where you can see it, right? It's San Jose at the start of the year, it's Buffalo at the start of every season. When things get rolling, a shitty team can do well for a while, and I think that's all that's happening. The one thing of all of it that throws my brain for a loop out of all those games is they beat Colorado 2-1.
Yeah.
Everything else, I'm like, yeah, those are all lucky games where they're outscoring terrible teams with bad goaltending while they're feeling hot. But then that one, holy shit, they beat Colorado 2-1. That's a real hockey win right there. But having said that, I'd give it about another. They have 4 days off, and then they play Pittsburgh, and I have a feeling that break is going to kill that momentum, and they're going to be back to the worst.
The Chychrun also being on the shelf for the next couple weeks worries me a little bit, because he was just as hot as anybody on this team. And that's saying something. But with Nick Schmaltz, like, going 2 points per game, almost 3 points a game in his last six games, like, you stretch his his last 10, his last 15, he's looking good. He's looking really good. He's also shooting 24% on the year with under 2 shots a game. Jeez. And he has 18 goals. And that's like half his points right now. So it's just like there's so much unsustainability with him. You know, IPP is up at 75%. That's a little worrisome. I don't know. Like Schmaltz does this every year. And we talk about it every year that it's not sustainable. And then it finally fizzles out. So I do think like this is just the team feasting right now. And they're going to get full at some point.
I will say this, though, before we move on, pump your tires a little bit. I did a double listen to TJ, which really paid off. Like there's one thing you say a lot, like unsustainability. Yeah, great. Unsustainable. Take it while it's happening. It doesn't mean avoid those players. It means when it goes away, avoid those players.
Right.
I put out a little question out in Discord. I was trying to decide tonight who to play. I had Verona and Kraus, and I had to pick one of the two to start tonight. And both guys have been relatively hot. And every single person who responded said, take Verona. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take Kraus because TJ mentioned him on the last show. And he did get me 5 points in the last 2 days. Well, thanks, buddy.
Beauty. You're welcome.
Thanks, buddy. But that's one of those times where all of the stats say it's unsustainable. Don't pick this guy up. But fuck no. Pick him up while it's happening. And then, you know, 2 games of no points, bail.
The next guy is Clayton Keller, who's got 12 points in his last 6 games, riding just as hot as Nick Schmaltz. I remember saying earlier in the year, I forget when, but it was probably right at the beginning of this hot streak, but his minutes shot up huge. Like he's seeing close to 3.5 more minutes a night. He's seeing shorthanded time. He's getting crazy amount of minutes right now, and his points are reflecting that. His shots are reflecting that. He's point per game on the season right now, which is hard to believe. It's insane to believe that you can have a point per game player in Arizona, given what we thought about Arizona. But a lot of those points are in the last little bit where he's cashing in big time. So again, you want to look at his season on the whole. There's nothing really that's sticking out advanced stat wise. That's like, okay, you know, I'm starting to worry a little bit. His IPP is high. The power play IPP is pretty high. Shots look really good. The shooting percentage is a little high. On-ice shooting percentage is crazy high because that's what the team is doing right now. They're just scoring. So I don't know. Is he a 70-point player to you next year, Clayton Keller?
Do you remember at the start of this season when we bet that? I got to go back in one of our episodes, but we did an over-under with basically that at the start of the year. And I took the under and you guys took the over.
On 70 points for Keller?
It was 65 or 70. I'll check the number again, but we did. I know you and Zach were on once on the over side, and I was on the underside of whatever number we picked. And if you look at his recent, man, I'm looking at his last 2 weeks right now, and
he's working hard at that over.
It's fucking crazy. And again, it's not one big game. He's 2 points a night here, 3 points a night here, is one here, four here. I don't know. Like at this point in the season, if he's available to get him right now. He's got to chill from this a little bit, but he's probably going to be pretty good. Maybe 70 point pace ish from here on out. I mean, what's he been on recently? Like a 160 point pace, but
2 points per game. Yeah.
I think, yeah, 65, 70 point pace from here to the end of the season. Absolutely respect that.
Next is the Montreal Canadiens. So they're 7-2-1 in their last 10. Which is, again, crazy just because we're seeing these basement teams making this wild surge. You know, maybe they're playing spoiler. Maybe it's what it is. But, man, you're getting goals from a crazy amount of people. Arturi Lehkonen has 6 goals in his last 9 games played, shooting 33%. Josh Anderson also shooting 33% with 5 goals in his last 9 games. Rem Pitlick has 3 goals in his last 10. And he's also got 9 points. Both Suzuki and Caulfield have turned a new leaf. They each have 14 points, both shooting around 20%. Michael Pezzetta shooting around 20%. Ben Sherratt is shooting at like 15%. Mike Hoffman at 13. Like there's a lot of craziness going on here. They're getting a ton of goals.
They are.
What's your read on Montreal right now?
Well, you know what? I think right now, obviously on a heater at the moment, but At the start of the season, Cole Caulfield was the hands-down rookie of the year, going to be point per game. Nick Suzuki, same thing. Jeff Petrie, Norris defenseman, blah, 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 blah. So, right, it's kind of that St. Louis thing, not to the same degree, but this is what everybody thought they were going to be at the start of the year. So, I don't know. These guys who are scoring, most of them were supposed to score. Shouldn't be a shock that Cole Caulfield's now doing well. Sherratt, they did put on the shelf.
Yeah.
Meaning he's probably on the way out. Josh Anderson's on the shelf right now. So the guys who are scoring, I mean, Cole Caulfield's still only taken up in 58% of leagues in Yahoo. Jeff Petrie in 55% of leagues. So, I mean, guys like that, I'm absolutely picking up right now. I own both of those guys in most of our leagues, so don't bother looking. But yeah, I love those Montreal players. That's something I love to look at, is like a guy like Jeff Petrie. He's been so good for years and years and years, and he had a shitty half season. Like, everything says he's going to be decent. Yeah, I think I have more faith in Montreal maintaining some kind of positive season more than Arizona.
I think, you know, they can probably go 500 the rest of the way, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if they're, you know, 75% win percentage type team, but, you know, they're shooting 12% over this 10-game stretch here. Their PDO is out of hand. It's like 105. And they're getting decent goaltending. You know, outside of this game against Winnipeg where they gave up 8 goals, there's no real, oh my God, what the fuck kind of happened thing. Like, they, you know, they shut out the Sabres. They beat the Senators. They won against Edmonton. They won against Philly. There's some teams in here who are like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Like, you know, you beat these guys. They beat the Maple Leafs. They beat the Canucks. Or no, they lost to the Canucks. They obviously beat the Calgary Flames. So, like, there's some good teams in here. But they're not doing bad. It's just like, I do believe they're getting extremely lucky. And they're having more of these lucky games more recently. I do think there's a lot of luck here, especially when you look at the players who are making this impact. Lekkonen, who's got a 72% IPP and a 33% shot percentage. Josh Anderson, same thing. 5 goals on 15 shots. When your top scorers are unsustainable, yeah, it's probably going to come down. So that's where I'm at there.
Well, I definitely expect the surprising numbers like a Lekkonen, like those guys, to come down, but it shouldn't be too surprising to see Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki and Jeff Petrie doing well. They're great. They're good players. They tried to convince us otherwise for about 60 games, but they are good players.
Next, I'm looking at the Minnesota Wild, who are having a horrendous stretch of games here. They got they're 3-6-1 in their last 10. And, you know, Kaprizov at the top with 11 points. Kevin Fiala with 12 points in his last 10 games. Doing Fiala stuff, shooting a ton. Second half Fiala always kind of puts it up like this. But, you know, there's only a few guys that are doing anything worthwhile. Zuccarello, Boldy, Gaudreau even making a case for some sort of relevancy at this point. But I think the players we need to look at are their goalies. Talbot's not been doing well. Kakinen's not been doing well. That's going to get you into some trouble. It really is.
Well, that was a strength of theirs. I guess over the last couple of years, this has kind of been Minnesota, though. They've been pretty streaky as a team. And, you know, remember Talbot was on a monster streak for a while last year. So they are a streaky bunch. It's another team where I just feel like the shittiness is unsustainable. But I don't know. Second half Fiala here with 10 points in the last 8 games. He's doing his thing and Kaprizov's doing his thing. But as far as wins and losses go, that's going to come down to the goalies. I mean, Hartman is still doing okay. 6 points in his last 8.
Yeah, it's not for lack of offense here. But at 5-on-5, neither goalie has over a 900 save percentage in the last 10 games. They're both letting up right around 2.5-3 goals a game. And they're getting, like, their expected goals against is pretty high. Like, they've given up 12 goals against, and they're expected is like 8.5. So they're getting a lot of high danger chances against two, like almost 3 a game for Kakinen, 2 a game for Talbot. And they're going in because their high danger save percentage is right around 700. You know, you get 10 shots, 3 of them are going in. And it's coming down to the goalies.
The one bit of offense that's still out there that's available is Matt Boldy. He's continued another guy where I was a little skeptical when he just raged in for those first few games. I thought that would die off a little bit, but it hasn't really. He's, 6 points, 4 goals in his last 8 games. So, and he's only 29% owned. So if there was a guy on that team I was interested in getting who's a guy, it would probably be him, I think. But I hate their goalies, so I hate their goalies so much.
Then Vegas. So Minnesota's 3-6-1 in their last 10. Vegas 3-7-0. And it's not just limited to this 10-game sample size, because I forget who it is who I talk about in trends. I think it's Shea Theodore. Let me scroll down here. Vegas is 8-10-2 in their last 20 games. They've been on a skid for a while, a long while. And I think it has a lot to do with the injuries, cycling in and out, and, you know, getting Jack Eichel and figuring out what the new identity of this team is. I think that's a big problem, is they've lost their identity. I think you said that in our last podcast, is maybe Brian Burke said something like that. You're introducing a new superstar into a mix of misfits, and that's who they built their identity on, is being literally a team that no team wanted to protect their players, and making it to the finals in the first year.
Yeah.
So they had a chip on their shoulder. That was the identity. And you get Petrangelo, then you get Leonard, then you get, you know, Fleury comes out and he is who he is.
I mean, there's a fucking statue of Fleury there, isn't there? You know,
there should be.
They're trading the heart and soul. But I mean, of the players who have been doing well, it's been Marchessault and Eichel. But Marchessault made it really clear a couple times in public now that it is a locker room team, and people are a little bit lost. I mean, Mark Stone, I mean, that guy is...
He's glue.
I hate overusing the locker room guy thing, but when you're an all-star offensively, an all-star defensively, at least see that guy score a goal, his fucking head explodes. It's like when Ovi scores a big goal or something. Like, you remove that from the picture. This time, Stone's not even traveling with the team, so he's not even there on the hotel or on the plane or anything right now. And it, like, you know, stats are wonderful and all that, but you take a guy he's their JT Miller, right? That's showing you why you can't trade JT Miller right now, because that still matters. If Mark Stone's playing, you have to try harder. You just look like a fucking asshole. So you remove that, bring in a new superstar. Like, Eichel's doing okay, 5 points in his last 8. It's the whole, like you said, even before that, the team's been sketchy all season long. I do see them putting it together. I have to believe they're going to put it together. And a few of these people start turning things around. I mean, Stevenson's kind of, after going point per game for quite a long time, way died off. I'm trying to say I think they're going to turn it around, and it actually just doesn't feel right. I'm a little torn. Statistically, I think they should, but I don't feel like they're going to. I think this is the crash.
It's weird to say, but I have more faith in Minnesota than I do Vegas at this point.
Imagine if this was not Vegas, if this was expansion team this far into their careers, this would be great that they're almost making the playoffs. The fact that they came in and just, like, you know, misfitted their way to be one of the best teams in the league for a few years. Like, maybe they're turning into a pumpkin here. Maybe the magic was that they were, you know, the band of misfits, and now they don't have that going for them. Now it's okay, Eichel, you do it. Petrangelo, you do it. You guys are making $10 million a year. You take care of shit for us. You're getting paid to. So I don't know. I'm confused about Vegas. Like, the numbers and looking at their roster tells me that they should get a lot better than they've been. But when I get my inner Zach going and just think about the team and how it feels, I don't feel like they're going to.
It's a strange feeling.
Which, I guess, if you want to put that into fantasy terms, that's got me staying away from them. At this point, playoffs coming up, fantasy playoffs coming up, I don't like that sketchiness.
Small mailbag here, because they were kind of like trends questions, but they were phrased more like just general questions. Shark Gang in the Discord, or maybe he was on Twitter, he's wondering about both of his guys, Bennett and Sergachev. And I have a buy into the semis weeks 24-25 Bangers Cast Leagues. Should he stream either Bennett or Sergachev out for a St. Louis player? O'Reilly is on the wire. Now, I'm looking at all of the games. So I started, I didn't know if he had bye weeks 24, 25, or if he's going straight into weeks 24 and 25. And if that's the case, then he's starting, I think, on the 11th, where I don't see any like distinct, like Florida has 10 games, St. Louis has 10 games. You know, St. Louis has one off night. Florida has two. So I just don't see the benefit here. Like I've been hearing a lot of buzz about St. Louis.
And he's talking about, it says here, Bangers Cats League.
Bennett, man.
I'm not stoked on O'Reilly in a Bangers Cats League.
Unless you're in face-off wins, like I don't see any. I would much rather have Sam Bennett.
Yeah.
He bangs. You know, Florida's a team that's going to make improvements somewhere. Which could, you know what? He's already bumped off power play one and he's still on a pretty hot streak right now.
Yeah.
So there's not much I would change about Sam Bennett. You know, there have been, we do this segment every single week, trends. And Ryan O'Reilly has come up so many times as being a frustratingly cold player to own, to roster. And people are just not happy with what he's put out. You know, things can change and things can turn around, obviously. But man, I'll tell you, like, I really like Sam Bennett in a Bangers Cats League.
Yeah.
So much more.
Absolutely.
So much more. And Sergachev bangs around a lot too.
Yeah, I don't mind him. And, you know, the one player that he's mentioned here was O'Reilly. So maybe there's other options. But yeah, O'Reilly does not excite me whatsoever in a Bangers type of league. And Bennett sure does. And Florida is a type of team where, if you're anywhere in the top 10, like either power play, they score so much. Like not being on PP1 isn't the end of the world.
Man. And like Bennett, I'm looking back at looking at his last like 20 games here. He's got two stretches of four games each of no points. But in these stretches, you know, he's putting up a shot, he's putting up a hit, he's putting up two shots and a hit, he's putting up 10 faceoff wins, seven faceoff wins if you're in that type of league. He's always doing something. And then after that, when he starts getting points, he's putting up seven shots, eight shots, six, six, two, five, two, 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 zero. So like the averages are really, really good. And he bangs around a lot, which I'm a fan of. Obviously a fan of. So I'll take a 60-point pace from Bennett with hits rather than, you know, Ryan O'Reilly's.
Well, and you know his thing has always been he's a big game guy, right? Like either playoffs he shows up after not doing anything for a long time, and then do you remember when he first got to Florida at the end of the season and it was like,
oh my gosh,
Jesus Christ,
lights out.
If anything, he's the type of guy to start ramping it up. So yeah,
I think so too. Looking at it now, O'Reilly's on a 58 point pace, Bennett's on a 59 point pace. If you're going to drop somebody to add one game over the course of 2 weeks, I don't know if that's really worth it, especially when you're adding a player who does less,
removing hits. Yeah.
So I'm sticking with Sam Bennett there, and that's easy. Like you're getting easily an extra shot a game. You're getting a ton more hits, like so many more hits, and a better chance at points because like I like what Sam Bennett puts together better than I like O'Reilly. If you're in a face-off win league, then maybe it starts to tilt, but you're still getting face-offs out of Sam Bennett every once in a while. I don't know. I'm Bennett all the way here. And I really don't mind Sergachev either.
I'm fine with keeping those guys.
Depending on the state of your D, what your defense looks like he's a 46-point pace defenseman right now with okay shots and hits and blocks. But, you know, Tampa, I think, you know, is probably culminating right now as the whole team's on kind of a cold streak, so maybe he's on the tip of your tongue. Maybe you have a trigger finger with a drop, but I don't know. Tampa's not the type of team to go cold for the rest of the season. They just straight up aren't. So that's a blip for them as well. So I don't know if I'm really seeking out St. Louis just for the sake of one or two games over the course of 4 weeks, especially when most of them are away games too. Like they're on the road for a lot of this. Like if you start on the 11th and go 2 weeks, St. Louis plays seven road games and they're only home three times.
Increasing games played is absolutely one of the main things in managing a team, but you do have to draw the line, right? Like a game.
Yeah.
When one player has clear benefits. Yeah. It's, you do have to just be careful. Don't get so wrapped up in maximizing games played that you start, you know, getting rid of quality players like that.
So looking at this, at St. Louis's splits here, keeping in mind that 70% of their games to finish out the year, if you start on the 11th of April for your playoffs, are away games. St. Louis is 27-3 at home, and they're 14-10-5 on the road. So they're a 500 team on the road, and they're a very, very good team at home. Keep that in mind when you're starting to think about St. Louis. Like they're spending a lot of time on the road. They're not very good on the road when it comes to, you know, bringing home the win. So again, keep it in mind. And you know, Florida plays half their games on the road, but they're really good on the road. They're 14-7-6, 26-6-0 at home. So I am 100% sticking with Sam Bennett. All right, moving along into that. Craigers Life asks, hey boys, what are your thoughts on Spencer Knight rest of the season? I know TJ and Zach hate goalies, but he could be a difference maker if he turns into a 50-50 split with Bob. What do you think here? Like, what do you think? Do you think there's really a 50-50 opportunity for him?
Well, first of all, I think Zach wants to smack his pee-pee because Zach loves Spencer Knight and Zach loves streaming goalies. So Zach would like to remove himself from that comment altogether. But man, Spencer Knight had a rough go at the beginning. He was only playing 500 over the whole course of the season, but his last couple of games, he's at like a 955 save percentage. So he is playing a little better. They're going to want to rest Bob going into the playoffs. There's no doubt in my mind they're going to ride the shit out of Bob in the playoffs. So they're going to want to rest him. But at the same time, he's old and they aren't going to want him to get cold because Bob was playing better when he was getting more games. So I do not see a 50-50 split from here on out. But I do think that Spencer Knight might get more games, a higher percentage of games than he has over the course of the season. But no, I wouldn't put it at 50-50. No way.
No. I think it's close to like 60-40, you know, starting off. They have six back-to-backs the rest of the way. So that's six games that you can guarantee almost. And then they have, you know, 17 other games. And you're going to split those 17 probably, you know, 75-25. So another five, six games like that. You'll probably get like eight or nine starts out of them the rest of the way. There's only 23 games left for Florida at this point. So you're getting, you know, close to 40% of those starts. Florida's a very good team. A very, very good team. So I like what Spencer Knight could do. I wish we had a little more context. Like, you know, who are you dropping mm-hmm. to get Spencer Knight on your team? But, you know, I think he's great for a spot start. Maybe a little, you know, I'm just using my own leagues as reference at this point. But, you know, I'm not holding a backup. Is basically what I'm getting at.
Yeah, probably not. And just a heads up, in the near future, Florida has a week off coming up too. So just be aware of that. If you are getting into Florida players, they're off from like the 18th and they have like 5 or 6 days off. So future, love Spencer Knight. I think he's a great goalie and long-term, yeah. But like you said, Bob's just playing too good and they got to get their $80 million worth, man.
I'm looking at the rest of their schedule, San Jose, Vegas, Anaheim, those 5 days off like you're saying, but then Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal, Chicago, New Jersey, Buffalo, Toronto, Buffalo, Nashville, Anaheim, Winnipeg, Detroit, New York Islanders, Detroit, Toronto, Tampa, Boston, like the end of it is a stretch. Like, and then you go into Ottawa, Montreal, like all of these games sound fucking awesome for Florida. Like, I think they've got a pretty cushy rest of season schedule too. So when I'm looking at Sam Bennett, going back to our last question here, when I'm looking at Spencer Knight, I really like Florida and their prospects rest of the way. 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And like you said, as long as with Spencer Knight, as long as you keep in mind the amount of games he's going to probably play and how big your roster space is.
Yeah,
you know, if you got a huge roster with tons of bench, then sure, he's the kind of guy. If it's the kind of league where keeping a bunch of goalies is a good idea, he would be one of the ones I'd look at. But in a standard type of league, he'd be a streamer for me.
I'm looking at these back-to-backs too. Like one of these back-to-backs is New Jersey, Buffalo. Another one is Ottawa, Montreal. Another one's Buffalo and Nashville. These back-to-back games, the ones that scream backup, like Buffalo or Buffalo again, you know, these are going to be good games for Spencer Knight. So, you know, if you do have that luxury where you can get a backup into your roster, I think Spencer Knight's a great call. I love Florida. I hope Giroux goes there. I'm going to say that again. All right. Auditor Scott says, assuming Patches is not too hurt, is he going to be this bad the rest of the season? Heinze was also curious about Patches. So we got two tips here about Patch Ready, who is back on the shelf. But man, I'll tell you straight up, like Vegas does not inspire confidence right now in general. And like, you know, it's a give and take because Patch Ready's not playing well and that plays into Vegas not playing well and Vegas not playing well plays into Patch Ready not playing well. So it's weird. What do you think? Like,
I'm just looking at reading the latest update I can see right now on his injury and all it says is he left halfway into the game and they don't know what the injury is.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I hate these kinds of situations all around. The one thing that changes it for me is this: we're talking fantasy playoffs basically now. So you're either fighting to get into your fantasy playoffs or you're going to be in them when you're having these guys. I don't like sketchiness like that. So
he's not somebody you're dropping. So like the options are super limited right now.
Hopefully you can put him into an IR plus. Which is something that can work out. I love it when those IR plus spots work out to be just like a bonus streamer. If you can have throw him on the IR, pick somebody up for a while, and then, you know, sneak him in as an extra ad sometime. But shit, he was so hot for a while, and you know, he's so cold for a while. I have so little confidence in Vegas all around. I can't give a good answer to it because I just... To see the first half of his season compared to the second half, I have no idea what he's going to come back with.
All right, we are running very long at this point, so we're just going to dive into our hot and cold segments. We're going to pick two players, maybe three out of each one, and give a take on them. We got a lot of submissions. Thank you, everybody, who submitted players here. For hot, I think we're going to go with Dobson, Dylan Strome, and Josh Norris. I think those are really good players, hot button items right now. Mason Marchment's going to fall out. Like there are a couple guys that I wish we had more time to talk about these guys, but you know, maybe next week, maybe we can do a little something in the Discord. You guys can hit us up with players and, you know, we'll take a couple minutes and give our takes on them. But right now I want to kick it off with Noah Dobson, who I have been riding since the beginning of the streak. Like I picked him up. I was a little intrigued about him. I talked about him on the show. I hope you guys cashed in too. He's got 18 points in his last 22 games, a 67 point pace. Eight of them are power play points. It's a bit longer than a streak. You like to see that kind of thing. 25 points in his last 35 games too, which is a 60 point pace, 11 power play points. Most recently, he's point per game in his last nine with 5 power play points. Let's just start it from the top. I want to get into your take before I really bring it home here with what I think here. What is your take on Noah Dobson and the Islanders as a whole?
Those might be two separate things.
I think so too. Yeah, it was a trick question. I'm trying to keep you on your toes here.
I'm into Noah Dobson. I am into any defenseman who's, you know, around a point per game, obviously, leading the team in power play points, leading the team in shots. He blocks a reasonable amount. He doesn't hit too much, so don't expect that. The forwards on the Islanders do all the hitting, apparently, the fourth line there. But no, I love Dobson. I don't think it's a fluke. Another team where the Islanders were supposed to be, you know, most people had them in the playoffs, and they just had a shit long time. And guys like Anders Lee, guys like, you know, Brock Nelson, Beauvillier, these guys who do their scoring, JJP, they are starting to score. But, you know, when we're talking about hot players, like we're talking about this hot team, the Islanders, they're still, their hot players are maybe point per game. That's New York Islanders at their peak because they don't score that much. So don't get too excited. He's not going to be Cale Makar or anything, but I think the rate he's on, like I'm looking at his last 7 games, 6 points, 5 of them on the power play, 2 blocks a game. I think those numbers, other than the, you know, 90% of his points coming on the power play, I think that those rates, like 60 point pace, Yeah, I think that's cool for him.
Their entire top six is on fire right now. And JGP, who falls outside the top six. So like there's a good amount of offense going around. I think Noah Dobson is getting in on that. When I start with sustainability, the first thing I'm going to look at is deployment. Like, is there any chance that you're moving down the lineup that might jinx this whole thing? And the answer is no. It's straight up no. He's got two times the amount of shots as the next defenseman. So, like, if we're talking about his deployment on the top power play, on the top pairing, that is not going away. IPP is fine. Shooting percentage is fine. So I'm seeing a lot of, like, green flags, if we can call them that. The primary assist percentage are fine. The on-ice shooting percentage isn't worrisome. He's getting a ton of offensive zone starts. For him, like, his on-ice goals for has gone up in line with the amount of time that he's getting. He's getting 22% more ice time this year, almost 5 minutes, than he did last year. His point per game pace is up almost double. So, you know, coupled with the amount of time that he's getting compared to last year, with his growth as a player and his top power play role, I'm not worried about him. I think Noah Dobson's good to go here. The thing that I'm worried about is the New York Islanders, because they are on this uncharacteristically high offensive run right now. And that's not New York Islanders hockey. But what the New York Islanders were doing earlier in the season isn't working. So maybe they found something that works. I have a lot of trust in Barry Trotz as a coach to find something that works and stick with it. So for me, I think he does. I think he keeps it up. I'd put 55-point pace the rest of the way is kind of a floor at this point, so long as the Islanders don't fall off a cliff, which is just as likely. So it's this really delicate situation for Noah Dobson, but I have more faith in him because, you know, he's having a hand in the offense rather than relying on it.
Seems like he's making the offense, like he's driving play.
73% of his points are primary, so he's creating offense. He's not a beneficiary of it. Like he's part of the reason. So I'm big on Noah Dobson. I think Kai Allen on Twitter, Kai Allen 21, both him and Lowkey 93 on Discord were both curious about Noah Dobson. Boys, I think we found one here. So
thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm in.
He's the only D on the Islanders that has a point in the last month. Like even Pulak has no points. Actually, that's not true. The other Sebastian Aho has one power play point. He's the only other defenseman with a power play point in the last like 15 games.
Yeah. So again,
his deployment's not going anywhere.
The deployment's safe. Yeah. Okay. Hot button issue here. Dylan Strome. Tomasito is better than your favorite player in the Discord. Was curious about him as well as Punk Hockey on Twitter. Strome's got 11 points in his last six. That is 34% of his total points for the year in the last six games. And for reference, Kane has 15 points in his last six, and DeBrincat's got 10. That line is on fire right now. On fire. Strome is shooting 35%. Seven of his 11 points are goals. I should be justified if I were to end the segment right there on Dylan Strome. You know, more than half of his points are goals, and his shooting percentage is triple what a sustainable shooting percentage would be. So I don't think so. I'll say it right there.
Yeah, fair. I agree. He's no question. He's been worth having lately, but I wouldn't invest or bet anything on him keeping it that way. I don't like it. I don't like him.
The Hawks are playing really well. So I think this is one of those things that, like, going back to what we said earlier in the episode, unsustainable doesn't mean impossible. So have a really short leash with Dylan Strome, but he's still somebody you should be rostering while Chicago's this hot. And, you know, they're not doing awesome as a team. Like, offensively they are, but they're giving up a shit ton of goals as well. Like, they, you know, they're scoring 4.5 goals a game, but they've lost to what? They lost to Boston, Tampa Bay, and Philly in their last six games during this stretch. But they've beaten Ottawa, Anaheim, and Edmonton. So, like, they're putting up a shit ton of goals, but they're also getting scored on, like, a lot. They scored 8 goals on Anaheim, and 4 of Strome's 11 points were in that game. So, for me, I think this dries up with Dylan Strome.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Josh Norris, next up, man. What do you think about this one? He's got 8 points in 7 games since returning.
I like him. I really like him. I didn't think he would be scoring this many goals, to be honest, but...
Six of his 8 points are goals since return.
Yep. Yep, that's all very true. this pace will not continue, of course, but he's good, man.
You know what I like about this situation here is, as much as I think like those goals are going to dry up, Batherson is going to come back next week, hopefully. Like, he's close, and it was said like he's not returning this weekend. But with that, maybe that washes out some of this regression that we might see. Batherson's good. He's going to bring offense. He's going to bring whatever offense that Norris is losing based on the averages, I think. I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what we might probably see is a little more evening out, like maybe a few more assists, a little less percentage of his points coming from goals. But I fully believe he's a great player. And when he gets his that top line, like that line's pretty magic. I like it. So I'm in on him for sure.
I think so too.
50% rostered in Yahoo right now, so you might even find him laying around, and he's definitely worth the pickup when you... The only negative to him, I'd say, is the straight C.
Yeah, that's tough. I think it does wash out. With Batherson come back, that's that line that they've been waiting for, and I do think that washes out any regression we might see. We hope. But let's get into the cold segment to wrap this out. We got Tanner Janot, Shea Theodore, and just Tampa in general. We're not going to touch on everybody, but, you know, and we kind of already talked about it, and my sentiment remains the same. If we just want to start here on Tampa, is like our buddy, the Mark Skinner on Discord. Skinner was wondering, you know, what's going on with Tampa. To be honest, like over the last month, haven't they played the fewest amount of games? So maybe they just lost a little bit of momentum.
Well, and I mean, they know how to win the cup now. They've played more hockey than anybody else in the last 3 years, and they learned the hard way, you know, winning the President's Trophy isn't worth shit. So I fully see this as the veteran team just kind of putting it into neutral for a while. They will start ramping it up in the last week or so of the season, and they're trying to three-peat. I think this is... unofficially, probably, but this is just them taking, you know, playing at 80%, making sure they try not to get hurt, and they're gonna crank it back up again. Absolutely, it's fucking Tampa, man.
They saw New Jersey on the 15th of February. Then they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days off, full week off, and then they pretty much just picked up like normal hockey. But they've been playing a lot of 2-game weeks lately, so I think like, throwing that kind of rust on a team can't be good. So maybe they're trying to find their place. It's Tampa, man. Like, this is not a team that dries up on offense. It's just not.
No, I think, you know, what we'll probably see for the next little while is maybe they'll be playing around 500-600 hockey with the odd game where they go, can we just go score 8 goals just to make sure we could still do it?
Yeah.
You know, but I do think this is just a natural rest period. I don't think there's anything wrong with the team at all. Hang on to your players, but it's going to be a tough one because I think that is what's happening. I don't think anyone's trying to win a scoring title or anything like that. So you can't drop Steven Stamkos, but...
You can think about Palat. So Rupee Hints Lover on Discord asks if we should launch Shea Theodore into the sun, which I, you know, a great way to put it. I didn't really have a verdict on this one just because we talked about it already a little bit about Vegas having some trouble. You know, their power play has been underwhelming for yet another year. Their offense has pretty much dried up. You know, in their last 20 games, Shea Theodore has only got 7 points. That's tough. And Vegas as a team is scoring less than 2.5 goals per game in that span. They have 5 power play goals on 54 opportunities. That's like 9%. And they're shooting 7% as a team. Now, Max Pacioretty was submitted on this, you know, trends as a cold player. And there was curiosities there. Shea Theodore is in the list for cold. You know, right about the only people that we could talk about, going back to something you said, is Jack Eichel and Jonathan Marchessault. Those are the only two players that are worth talking about in Vegas right now. And everybody else is pretty much ice cold. This seems like a team thing. Like, they're having a really tough stretch as just a team.
Like, a point of it being weird, like, no one has any power play points, and then Marchessault and Eichel have a few. Like, they have a bunch of points, like well over a point per game, or at least over a point per game in the last couple weeks, 30 days. And then, like, Theodore, man, zero power play points in a month. That sucks. I think Vegas just sucks. I think it is a team thing. And I don't know. I don't feel like it's going to turn around. I really don't. If it does, I don't think it's going to happen until the last few games. So I mean, you can't just drop Theodore, can you?
I would advocate against that. I don't think you should do it.
I would not drop him. That's why I was trying to make it a question, so I don't look like an asshole here. But because he could very well just all of a sudden start going point per game, and this magic happens, and Eichel and Stone and everybody, and they're the greatest team in the last 20 years. That could very well happen, actually, at any point right now. But again, we're talking fantasy playoffs. You're going to have to cross your fingers on Theodore and hope they figure their shit out.
What is crazy, and what I think, you know, could play in their favor. So Vegas is one game up on Vancouver, one game behind Anaheim, and they're only like 3 and 4 points ahead of each team. So Vancouver with one game in hand could be 1 point behind Vegas for the fourth spot in the Pacific.
They play each other, I think, 3 times in the last 10 days of the season, too.
That's going to be it.
Could be a fun race. I could need a few days off at some point towards the end of the season. But yeah, man, like, I guess the question was about Theodore.
Yeah, you can't drop him.
You can't drop him.
I mean, if you're in like a really shallow league where that kind of thing happens all the time, then sure. But in the leagues that I'm playing in, 10-team leagues even, like, you can't drop Shea Theodore at this point. Like, he's somebody you can bench if you have a full D core, but like I've seen so much from Vegas over the last few years since they've joined the league for me to have faith in them. Like, it's tough. It's tough to say that this is going to be the way it goes, but I do think it's just they're having a bit of an identity crisis as a team, and they need to find that. They need to figure out who they are, what they want to be, how they want to play. And it's hard to do that when you have this revolving door of people going in and out injury-wise. Like, you're changing up the dynamic every single night, throwing, you know, Chandler Stephenson on the top line and then, you know, William Karlsson on the top line. And you're changing things up all the time. It's hard to find that continuity. It's hard to have an identity when every single day you're playing with new people. So it really comes down to they just need to get healthy. They need to figure out how they're going to get Mark Stone playing. It's probably their cap thing, but that's tough. That's shitty.
And I personally, fantasy notwithstanding, hope they lose every fucking game right now and don't score at all.
All right, last up is Tanner Janot. Zed on Discord was curious about him. He's only got 1 point in his last 6. Still got, you know, he's doing the hit thing. He's got 22 hits in that span. Time on ice, right where it always is. He's like 16-32. He just played 18-20 against Minnesota, a division rival. And before the slump, Janot was shooting at 26% in 32 games played. He racked up 23 points before this slump. So like a nice cherry-picked sample size. He got on everybody's radar as he was putting in offense. He wasn't just a plug for hits anymore. I don't know. This seems like the type of thing that would happen to a guy that was shooting 26% all year. It's just something that happens to self-correct.
Well, a banger who was shooting 26% a year, you know. So, I mean, that is the one thing he does have in his favor. He's got the dual eligibility, which is nice. They trust him, absolutely trust him in Nashville. He's playing lots. Not really a power play guy, but his hits are insane. Like
200 plus on the year already.
So if he's that in a categories league is massive. And even for a forward, he blocks, which is cool. He shoots a fair bit. So you can let his cold streaks hang a little bit longer. I mean, he's the type of guy where if you have him on your team, he covers all those categories regardless of the scoring that's happening. At the same time, you don't feel bad benching him on any given night. So I think he was playing offensively way better than he deserved for a while. It'd be a little mean, but look at the entire season. He's a 40-point guy, maybe, right? So,
and even that, like, you're doing okay. You're a third line guy.
Yeah.
And at this point, he's fifth in the league in hits, with 205.
It's fantastic.
It's quite a bit. Like, only Gudas, Clutterbuck, Reeves, and Delorier have more hits. Brady Tkachuk and Ristolainen right behind him.
Jeannot, I would, if you have him right now, he's only a streamer in my mind. He's only ever been a streamer. But if hits matter in your league, and you have a large roster, I think he's great. At the same time, and if you need to drop him, I wouldn't hesitate to drop him either.
I think this whole time, like, the offense was a bonus.
Yeah.
And maybe he spoiled us a little bit.
Yeah.
But I do think the offense comes back, maybe not to the same extent, just because I never bought that extent in the first place.
Yeah.
Based on the shooting percentage of 26%, it's tough to buy into. You know, having those reservations about his sustainability to begin with, I think this is a little bit of self-correction. Nashville 4-2-0 in their last six during this six-game cold streak where Jeannot only has 1 point. Look at who is scoring all the points. All the action is happening elsewhere. It's the first and the fourth line. Duchesne, Josi, Forsberg are seeing a ton of action. Ryan Johansson, Michael McCarron, Philip Tomasino are getting a lot of the play. And that's your first line and your fourth line. The middle six is not doing much. And I wanted to say, like, he's not, you know, maybe he's missing out. Maybe, you know, he's only got a 20% IPP. No, he's been on the ice for one goal in this span, and he got in on it. It was a secondary assist, so his IPP is 100% in this stretch. So you're just not getting anything from the middle six at this point. And I do think that turns around. They start to score a little bit more, and the offense comes back. So that's what's going to be the result of this. So I don't buy the cold streak, but I also didn't buy the hot streak that he was on. Now, it wasn't over point per game or anything, so you're going to have to throw darts somewhere in the middle. And that's where Tanner Jeannot is going to wind up at the end of the year. You're still going to get the hits, though, which is why you picked him up in the first place. So remember that.
A banger with benefits, right? Like, he might have that streak, but treat him as a banger is what I would say.
Spit in his mouth, you know. All right. That is it for a very long, very in-depth, fun episode, man. I had a good time. It's good to, like, be off work and be able to put in the work and, like, actually deep dive some of these guys that we're talking about. So thank you guys for coming along for the ride. Raj, thanks for hanging out. You guys can find us on Twitter at FHF Hockey. You can join the Fantasy Hockey Discord. We can talk a little bit more. There were a bunch of names that we didn't have a chance to bring up. And thank you guys for your submissions. If you want to submit for next week, get them in early. That way they're at the top of the list. So once again, thank you guys for listening, and we love you.
Love you.